Okay, I've tried to pare this down. I'm going to start my clock, but I tend to become oblivious. Okay. Nope. Let's get going the right direction here. Okay, so I'm talking today about the genetic diversity and conservation potential of eastern hemlock in Minnesota. What I'm giving here is a talk which was a part of my former graduate student, my master's student's thesis, Emily Ellingson, who's now the curator and native plants collection manager at the Arboretum State Botanical Garden of Kentucky, and I hope I do her justice here today. This project really started 17 years ago when I got to the University of Minnesota. One of the early tours I did at the Minnesota Landscape Arboretum, it was pointed out to me that this little grove of eastern hemlock in the woodland wildflower garden is actually derived from seed that was collected in an extirpated population of hemlock in northern Minnesota. Being a germplasm guy, that was kind of interesting to me right from the outset. In 2008, Welby Smith, who is a botanist with the Minnesota DNR, wrote this beautiful textbook. If you're anywhere in the upper Midwest, have an interest in native plants, this is a fantastic book, Trees and Shrubs of Minnesota. When I got to the part about hemlocks, Welby said, eastern hemlock is one of Minnesota's rarest and most imperiled trees. The number of sites where it grows in the state numbers around 10. There's total perhaps of 50 mature trees in the state. And at that time, eastern hemlock received no protection no legal or protection status in Minnesota, and its future was not bright. And the hairs went up on my neck. I love hemlock. And I immediately thought about these trees that we had at the Arboretum from that extirpated population. Thought, wow, those trees are really worth something. A little more about hemlock, eastern hemlock, a little more about it, one of 11 species found worldwide. Most of those are Asian species. There's 4 native in North America, 2 in eastern North America. Eastern hemlock depicted here in green, really 2 main range. One goes down the Appalachians and the other one comes across the upper Midwest here. Tsuga caroliniana, the other eastern species, is subsumed right here, kind of in the lower Appalachians within the main distribution there. A couple other things that I want to point out here while I'm on this slide. What we're looking at in Minnesota certainly isn't hemlock's biggest problem. As many of you in this room know, that problem is hemlock woolly adelgid, a small sucking insect that's devastating populations of eastern hemlock, particularly here, but it's now also found over here in Michigan as well and probably will spread across the complete range. The other thing I want to point out is if you take a look on the western range of the extent, you'll see these disjunct populations here, these little dots of green that extend up into Minnesota. Most all of these have been studied. There have been genetic diversity studies, several of them, of eastern hemlock, and they've included these disjunct populations, but nobody's looked at these up here previously. Just a little more. Hemlock, as I alluded, is an aesthetic species. It's a beautiful plant, a beautiful landscape plant, but it's also an important part of the natural ecosystems. It's a late successional long-lived climax forest species. Can live up to 400 years. It can exist as a small sapling, 1 to 2 inches, for 100 or 2 years in the understory before a gap opens up and it can jump up and succeed as an overstory tree. It's also a foundation species. It regulates ecosystem processes, nutrient, water, energy cycling. It also drives species composition in these ecosystems where it exists. So it's an important part of a natural ecosystem. In Minnesota, the species has never been common. It's probably never numbered more than 1,000, a couple thousand trees. It's now currently listed as an endangered species in the state. In the course of this research, Emily found 36 certifiably, sure beyond most reason of doubt, reproductive age native trees exist in the state. Probably over a little over 200 reproductive mature trees in the state. Most of them are not native or can't be certified as being native at this point. Basically, this project was a conservation biology project, is what it boiled down to. Being a rare tree, an endangered tree, we were interested in developing some best management practices in conjunction with the Department of Natural Resources. So we wanted to develop genetic information that would inform conservation projects and also restoration projects. And also, you can see here with these objectives in our project, did some propagation studies, seed and clonal studies to also assist in saving, preserving these trees. But today I'm just going to talk about one of these, and that's determining the genetic diversity in these native populations, the unknown population, or the trees that we're not sure where they came from, and compare those to some trees in the main ranges of this species. So we looked at trees from 13 different populations, and you can see them here. Three of them in my mom was an art teacher, and I don't know what to call that color. Goldenrod jumps to mind. So in goldenrod here, those are trees collected in the main ranges for the species. So these were comparison statistics used in the study. So the DuPont National Forest in North Carolina, we had samples collected from some colleagues down there and sent to us, collected in the Baraga State Forest in Michigan, and then also in Lake Minising in Wisconsin. So those being native trees in the native range for the species. The other things you can see highlighted here are these four green populations, and in those we also collected seed and looked at seedlings from those populations. So 265 mature trees overall included in the study, and 22 seedlings looked at here. Just real quickly, a map representation of these so you get a little better idea of what we're looking at. So main range populations in North Carolina, the Upper Peninsula in Michigan, Wisconsin, and then the populations we looked at in eastern Minnesota here. We used markers that were previously developed. These were developed by Shamblin et al. I believe those folks were in North Carolina, or no, Georgia, and then Yossarand et al. With the U.S. Forest Service in Mississippi and in Georgia. So these were microsatellite markers that were previously used that we picked up and used in this study. Emily picked out 21 of these first to work with, and she optimized these, looked at them with just a small subset, three Minnesota native trees, selected 12 of those and fluorescently labeled those, and then ran those with a subset, an array of eight Minnesota native trees, ultimately settled on eight of these SSR primers to use with the adult populations, and then when we got to the seedlings, we used four of those eight to analyze the seedling populations. One thing I need to say, I said we picked eight, but it came to be that our most polymorphic, our most informative marker, this TCN10A12, ended up being a little bit flaky. It failed to amplify in greater than 10% of the mature trees when all was said and done, and gave some ambiguous results. It was difficult to score, so we had to drop that one from the final analysis. Okay, so one of the first diversity things we looked at was just simple diversity, levels of heterozygosity. So you can see here a heterozygosity observed or expected, fairly high levels. In all cases, we had lower than expected heterozygosity levels of these primers in these populations. Kind of a standard or not atypical thing to see in these natural populations. In other studies that have been done with eastern hemlock, western hemlock, Carolina hemlock, with both SSRs and alazine markers, they've seen similar results. Ours were probably a little lower, our observed rates, than the others, but across the board in all these studies, they've seen less than expected levels of heterozygosity. So if you go through the data with hemlock, they did some pollen studies, pollen deposition in sediments and lakes and ponds. And these studies across the range of hemlock suggest that there was a range-wide population crash about 5,000 years ago with hemlock. And they hypothesized that that was due to some kind of an insect outbreak. Essence, what happened was we created a bottleneck effect was created with these at that time. So a real reduction in genetic diversity in the species. Another thing we did, I'm just picking some of the assays we did here, and I see from some of these studies you guys did, we need to look at some other assays or things to do with our data here. We haven't published this yet. But we looked at the fixation index, or FST. So fixation index can run from minus 1 to 1. A value of 1, we're looking at inbreeding, no influx of alleles from outside in an inbred population. A negative 1 would say we have a balanced population, free movement of alleles within the population in a heterozygous population. So our results here, first thing I want to point out is Hemlock Ravine in Minnesota. This is a scientific and natural area. It's a protected area in Minnesota. It contains the really only known remaining population, 36 trees that are certifiably native, known to be native. Again, these pollen studies suggest that these populations have existed there for at least 1,200 years. The population has fluctuated quite a bit, but it's always been fairly small. But interestingly enough, fixation index is pretty high in this, 0.463. The seedlings we derived out of that population, 0.497. suggests, or we figure, part of it is it's fairly isolated, this population, low number of trees there, and may have been founded with a relatively small number of trees. So pretty low diversity in this native population. This is in comparison, if we look at the main range populations in North Carolina, you can see negative 0.007, so there's a lot of intermixing there, and it's in that main range, if we remember that figure that you saw earlier. And then Baraga, Michigan, that's kind of in that upper natural range, not as high, or not a higher fixation index up there, 0.164, but again suggests there's fairly good heterozygosity over there, and quite a bit more than we saw in Hemlock Ravine. Interestingly enough, the other population, the main range population we looked at, Lake Minnising in Wisconsin, native population, wild-derived, we have a fairly high fixation index there, 0.327. Turns out when we look at exactly where that population is, even though it was supposed to be in the main range up there, that actually ends up being another disjunct population. It's not connected with the main range up north there, so it's another isolated population, quite a bit bigger than Hemlock Ravine and some of the others we looked at, but isolated by distance to some degree. So that's probably why we see that figure. Last thing we want to look at that's important is going back to that seedling population at the Arboretum derived from that extirpated population. This was near Mille Lacs Lake in northern Minnesota. And you see the fixation index, 0.060. So way lower than the other native population, Hemlock Ravine. This population, according to anything we can find out about it, was probably considerably bigger than this population. May have numbered in the hundreds, this Mille Lacs population, where this one was always double figure kind of number. So it was bigger, older, that may have something to do with it. But again, a lower fixation index, and same with the seedlings, a fairly low value there. If we take a look at, we did an age genetic distance calculation here and then plotted it as a dendrogram here. And what you can see is our most unrelated or distantly related population was that Hemlock Ravine population that exists way up there by Duluth, Minnesota. So the most distantly related. A close second is the Mille Lacs Lake population. So these are our two verifiably native populations. So it's interesting to see that they're that much different than everything else we looked at in this study. The most closely related ones were some trees we studied from Eloise Butler Wildflower Garden and then from in Theodore Worth Park in Minneapolis. Few people here that might know Minneapolis and might know the park system, and you will know that Eloise Butler Wildflower Garden is actually within Theodore Worth Park in Minneapolis. We don't have source records for these trees, but we do know when they were planted. They were planted in 1908. In all likelihood, they came from the same nursery source, and so that would account for that close relationship. We've got another group up here. We can, you know, visualize a group up there, imagine a group. These are all the rest of the trees that we looked at in Minnesota. All of these were either known to be sourced from nurseries or in all likelihood sourced from nurseries. We can't verify that they were wild trees to begin with. Some of them are growing wild now and untended. But interestingly enough, the main range trees from Michigan, the main range trees from Wisconsin fall within this group, suggesting that at least these trees were not sourced from way far away, like in Tennessee or North Carolina or something like that. It suggests that the trees that were planted purposely were sourced from the upper Midwest. We did a structure analysis here to evaluate how unique or structured the populations were and used this Bayesian clustering program. Our data sum, am I getting close? Best fit four genetic clusters, and I just want to say we're looking at six of the populations here where we see a dominance of one color, Hemlock Ravine, Mille Lacs, over here in North Carolina, less admixing, less mixture of alleles, more uniqueness in the population. So the conclusions, lower level of genetic diversity in these native populations suggest, and probably resulting from genetic bottlenecks, may impair the response to abiotic or biotic stress. So they're imperiled just with their genetics along with their low numbers. Secondly, the genetic distinctness in these populations suggests they may harbor worthy or important genetics and be worthy of protecting. So that's where the project's going next. The DNR is interested in both preserving and restoring some of these trees into the native habitat, and that's what the next project will be, is identifying those best sites. Okay, I think I ran over my time. Sorry about that. I'll be around if you want to ask questions. Thanks.